This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
Place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
People in the dance,
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, is the big head honcho, coming straight out of Brooklyn. And that is, of course, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 460 of the longest-running episodic Gold Standard. And speaking of Gold Standard, the Gold Standard came back to SmackDown tonight.
He did. I said in the comment section on the chats that they should have him also be revealed as Kurt Angle's son just to keep fucking with poor Chad Gable. They had the relationship.
Well, him and Charmel must have had crazy animal sex, huh, in 2000? Always a pleasure, JR. Last 2 days in the borough. Went Sunday night, of course, to SummerSlam. Myself, Mr. Greenhouse, Mr. D'Amato, AA, and the Doctor.
Yeah, you spent more on sausage and peppers than you did tickets, I think.
No, Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, we always talk about Yankee Stadium and Citi Field being expensive, but I've never paid more than $8 for a sausage and peppers, and holy fucking shit, that thing was expensive. But anyway, good show, as always. Crowd not as annoying as last year. The beach ball thing's gonna be a problem, though. But, you know, it all depends on your point of view, I suppose. Last night, again, I went to Raw last night, thanks to my good friends at CBS Sports. Mm-hmm. And
Michael Kay.
No, Tiki and Tierney. No. Last night, speaking of the beach balls, which, of course, if you watch SummerSlam, you knew the whole thing with Cesaro and the beach ball. Yeah. Last night, I don't know if you noticed it. I asked Greeny, and if you noticed it if you're watching it on TV, during the 8-man cruiser match, which is very good, by the way, and the main event, the 6-man, I'm sorry, the regular tag, Joe and Miz against Cena and Roman, there were beach balls going around. And actually, they were doing the wave. That was even more annoying. The beach balls aren't bad. If you're going to mess around with the beach balls, fine. But during the cruiserweight match, and I don't know if it was caught on camera, but they actually tried to get the beach ball onto, I don't know about into the ring, but at least on the floor, like get into the floor area, you know, the ringside area. And that's a bit much. but good show as always. You know, they marked out for Brock and those two epic power slams that Braun dropped.
That was a great match. And I mean, they're obviously loading up No Mercy. It sounds like they're going to do Braun Brock is official. And then the report today from Meltzer was that they're going to have Cena Reigns maybe now as well. Like that Reigns Brock was originally planned for New Orleans and that was off, and they were going to do Cena Reigns, but now they're saying it looks like Reigns Brock is back on for New Orleans again, and that it looks like they may actually do Cena Reigns sooner than later, which is surprising because that's Reigns Mania. But I would think they at least would hold that off till Survivor Series, right? I mean, I'd be shocked if they run that at No Mercy.
I can't see Brock holding the belt all the way to Mania, though. I have a feeling Brock and Reigns is going to be just a match, because I still feel in my gut that Finn's going to win in Philly, and I think it's going to be Braun and Finn at Mania for the Universal title, because I think Braun's going to get the belt at some point. I think Brock and Reigns are just going to have a match to beat the shit out of each other, and Brock puts him over. But I don't know. We got plenty of time to talk about that on Main Event and plenty of the other shows here on our Place to Be Nation wrestling platform. But tonight, JR, we are not talking new. We're going back 31 years to a place, by the way, that you and I will be very familiar with throughout the next few years as we expand pay-per-view in the World Wrestling Federation in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we hop in?
Sure. Also the home of a very big trade that went down earlier.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not sure what I think about it, though. I feel it was somewhat lateral. In terms of pure talent of the two important guys?
If the Celtics can re-sign Kyrie Irving, which, I mean, you'd think they would have to, given what they gave up, it's worth it because you're getting a younger version of Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah was going to be a free agent this year anyway, and they're already hand-wringing whether you should pay him max money. You know, is he really going to be hold up this much? So if they keep Irving, I think they did pretty well because he's better than – paying him is better than paying Isaiah. And he's better than anyone you're going to get with that number two pick. So, Brooklyn pick.
Well, I don't know. Jay Crowder was a good guy, you know, defense guy.
I feel like they could find another Crowder. I mean, if you get – Kyrie Irving's like a legit top, 12 guy?
Oh, absolutely.
They're not getting him in free agency anyway. So it's like
right.
You know, it was worth the roll of dice. And for the Cavs, it works out because Isaiah can probably replicate Kyrie for a year. And then LeBron's leaving anyway, so you can either keep Thomas and build around him, or just let him go and start from scratch and use that Brooklyn pick to start the rebuild. So I think both teams did pretty well, but I get the trade for both sides.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think we all know where LeBron's probably going to end up, along with what seems like a lot of people. But anyway, we digress. You can check that out on the Kings of Sport. But let us go, JR, to the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio, for Saturday night's main event. Not live, taped September 13th, airing on Saturday night, October 4th, 1986. On this evening, JR, not one, not two, three shows were going on this evening.
Yes, busy night.
I'm sure there was a matinee here somewhere. One of them we're not going to get into because you can watch it. Because on that night, believe it or not, they were at the Boston Garden. And that show, I'm not going to go through all the matches because that show is on the WWE Network, so you could just pop it on. So we won't get into that. They were at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, according to Graham Cawthon, included Ricky Steamboat. So I'm sure there was something. And also, for the first time in company history, they were in Jackson, Mississippi at the State Fair. Kind of like the Jackson, Mississippi version of the your little Warwick music tent.
They didn't have Dells there, I'll tell you that much.
That is true, yeah. They probably had moonshine. They probably had lemonade with something else in it. Here was your card. We won't say his name, but a guy that we'll be seeing later on down the line defeated Iron Mike Sharp. He was a guy that was a tag team in Memphis. Tag team you like a lot, JR. We'll debut him in 80, as we get to probably late 86 into 87. Hillbilly Jim defeated Steve Lombardi. Dick Slater defeated Kamala by DQ. Mike Rotundo and SD Jones, who subbed for Dan Spivey, defeated the Dream Team. Tells you what's happening with the Dream Team. They also are on our show. And the main event, your world heavyweight champion Hulk Hogan defeated Hercules. That was in Jackson, Mississippi. So they were in Boston. They were in Indianapolis and Jackson, Mississippi on this evening live. But on Memorex, they are at the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio for Saturday night's main event, the season premiere, as Jesse the Body would say at the beginning of the show, because we haven't been on Saturday night's main event since, May? So we've had a pretty full summer of house shows, JR, so it's nice to be out of the garden for an evening.
Yeah, mix it up.
Let's go to the report. What do you got?
Not too much, obviously. Jesse Ventura is back after taking some time away to film Predator. He has his new look, his new haircut, short hair, and announces, like you said, this is a season premiere of Science Mid Event. It was good to have Jesse back. It's kind of a long year without him so far. So excited about that. And I think it made Science Mid Event, you know, feel a little bit more important too, like that he's back for this show. We also get the debut of the Saturday's main event promos with the little music in the background prior to the opening video sequence. Of course, that'd be, you know, in the future, they'd kind of clean them up a little bit more. They'd have a little background with the logo on the back and all that. But for this, it was just kind of a generic background. So we hear from Jake Roberts, the Dream Team, and Johnny V, Kamala and the Grand Wizard, Paul Orndorff and Bobby Heenan, and Hulk Hogan. So lots going on off the top there. Yep. And we also then head to the show. So, you ready?
Yeah, let's hop in. What do we got?
So, Vince and Jesse open things up formally, and then Mean Gene is in the back talking to Roddy Piper. His leg is in a cast, and he has crutches, thanks to the attack by Adrian Adonis, Bob Orton, and Magnificent Morocco on television. Piper rants and says he'll wrestle tonight against the doctor's orders. We then hear from Hulk Hogan about his match tonight, followed by Gene chatting with Mr. Wonderful and Bobby Heenan about the match upcoming. And, of course, that is our opener, Hulk Hogan defending the WWF World title against Paul Orndorff, and their tensions had been building. Of course, remember back in June, Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan after some prodding by Adrian Adonis, teamed up with Bobby Heenan as a manager, and they had their battle back at the big event where Hogan won that by DQ in front of 74,000. Of course, we reviewed that a few weeks ago, the Mr. D'Amato. Mm-hmm. And that sets the tone here for the big match. I like that we're opening up right out of the new season with the hottest, you know, feud with the big title match. I think that was a good way to go, relaunching with a mega match. So you're not even, anyone who's tuning in after kind of either forgetting or happen to stumble upon it is getting like something massive right out of the gate. You see a movie star in Jesse Ventura, and then you get to the big title match with the hot feud. Orndorff and Heenan march out to Real American, and Hogan follows, eyes just locked in, filled with rage. Hogan starts hot, hammering away as Jesse says this is going to be a street fight. Heenan distracts Hogan, allowing Orndorff to close on him to the floor. Orndorff follows out and clubs away, but Hogan turns the tide and punches before shoving Orndorff back in. Hogan keeps laying the wood and battering Orndorff all around the ring. Heenan gets on the apron again, but Hogan levels him, and that allows Orndorff to catch Hogan with a clothesline. Orndorff follows with a hard elbow and a knee drop as Jesse talks about Bobby outsmarting the champ. Orndorff is relentless in battering Hulk, hammering away and taking him over with a suplex. Hogan powers up and levels Orndorff with a knee lift and a slam, but Heenan hooks the leg and hangs on tight. Orndorff charges, but Hulk ducks and flips him to the floor. A whole bunch of security comes out and carries out Bobby. Just lifts him up and carries him on the shoulders.
Mm. Yeah.
As Jesse's bitching about how he's being treated. Hogan mocks the brain and waves goodbye as Orndorff is flustered. After a break, we saw Heenan trapped behind a door. Back in the ring, Orndorff is still gathering himself outside. Hulk chased him back in, but Paul catches him with a knee to the head and works the back with stiff strikes, focusing on the head and neck. The challenger does his best to maintain control here, but Hulk eventually powers up and fires back with right hands and an elbow to the skull. Hogan keeps unloading and sets up a pile driver, but as he does, a fat sweat hog from the audience, as Jesse says, hops to the ring and clobbers Hulk with the DQ. Hogan smacks the fan as Jesse shouts, "I can't believe he hit a fat old woman!" Before Vince confirms it's Adrian Adonis. Adonis and Orndorff beat Hogan down until Piper comes out on crutches and makes a save to a huge pop. Piper even accidentally takes a swing at Hogan, and Hogan almost drills him back, but they kind of come to their senses and end things peacefully. Real fun match. Lots of action that never slowed down. Orndorff was sharp in his offense, and Hulk was Hulk as always. The Bobby stuff was good too. Another solid early installment of this feud as we get a big-time TV match, but no settlement because, of course, it's really still just getting underway. Piper stuff was great too as he just levels Adonis with the crutch. Jesse being concerned about Hot Rod's recent actions and behavior is a nice touch too because he's kind of being nice all of a sudden. Good opener here. I went 2.5 stars on this.
I went 2.5 stars as well. It's unfortunate because this is a great feud that, unfortunately, the lack of television is I don't want to say hindering. Well, maybe it is a little bit because, you know, yeah, we get promos and such on the, you know, the Weekend Cindy's superstars and challenge and stuff. But on our MSG house shows, and I'm sure other shows around the country, we're not getting this as much as we should. Hogan's not working a lot of house shows this summer. So I feel like this feud, as awesome as it is and as nuclear it is getting kind of gypped because I feel like we're not seeing it enough. Now, I'm obviously, you know, you want it to percolate. You don't want it to be overdone too quickly till you get to its apex. But I feel like, yeah, the heel turn happened, Jesus, like a month and a half ago. And it's like the first time that the national audience is seeing it because not everybody has seen the big event. So
yeah, not many at all.
Yeah, so
it wasn't aired. So
it wasn't aired. So you're feeling a little stiff, like, you know, what the hell's going on? You know, so that's, having said that, that's what makes this match so great to watch on a national stage because we haven't seen not only Hogan get Orndorff his comeuppance, but Orndorff getting a shot at the world title at the same time. So that's what's making this show get off to such a great start. And Jesse, again, we talked about, I mean, no, we love Alfred to death and he calls, you know, people supple. But it's nice that we're starting to get, you know, we want Jesse's opinion on all of these feuds going on right now, you know. And particularly with this change in Piper, because this is another big thing that has just happened. The whole, you know, somewhat face turn and the beat down with, you know, Morocco and Orton and, you know, the crutch and hitting him with the knee and everything. So all this has been going on the last like month on the Cindies. And now finally, after all this time, we're getting a national stage
right
to, update everyone on what's going on, which maybe you knew regionally, depending on what house shows you go to. And they don't talk about it much, I don't think. I'm trying to remember, we watched that October 4th Boston house show on the network, and I don't remember them talking much about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So it definitely seems like we're good for like this feud really needing to explode, and it does on the show. The match is great, good back and forth. I definitely think Hogan has had, as much as we haven't seen a lot of him, at least in our journey, he's definitely feeling comfortable in the role of the top dog.
Yeah.
I feel like 85 with Mr. T and all that, like he kind of got crutched a little bit, that he was kind of leaned on a little bit, and the heels kind of helped him out. 86, I really feel like he is coming into his own finally and feeling comfortable in his boots.
Well, he's starting to figure out he's starting to figure out the formula a little bit too.
Yeah.
Like within his matches and the feuds, we're getting a bit more of that. His matches in 85 were more unpredictable, and but the format here seems to be a bit more of that Hogan formula that he'll continue to refine. Like I don't think till another year or so is when he really settles in, but we're getting there. I think we'll see more and more as we move along with the quick hot start, beaten down, boom, quick finish. Like that, we seem to get more to that. Remember some of those 85 matches, whether it was Funk or Savage or Morocco, was a lot more back and forth. Versus just the long heat segment and the quick comeback. So,
right.
Yeah, we're going to see more and more of that. And yeah, the feud's just getting started. Like you said, on national TV, this is really the first installment we've seen since the turn. So, again, just really starting to get going. And, of course, touring around the country and starting to make some bank off of this. And I liked inserting Piper in because Adonis has been a big part of the Hogan-Orndorff feud and, of course, part of the issues with Piper. So it's well planned that they've kind of tied these universes together and, indirectly give Piper the rub. He doesn't really need it because he's so over anyway on his own. But having Hogan kind of be there in the ring with him puts him on his level as top dog faces. So I think that was a unique touch, too.
I agree. And Jesse already, I mean, it's just Jesse. I can't believe Hogan hit a fat old woman. That's great. it was really well done. And my only concern is, why would Adonis cause the DQ? I guess Orndorff was about to lose, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, now, let's talk about the end. Yeah, let's talk about the end. Seeing Piper come out, and then him and Hogan get that look, and you know that everybody was fucking digging that shit. Even in 1986 standards, where you're still in the kayfabe era,
right,
people were digging that shit of Hogan and Piper looking at each other like, what the fuck is this kind of thing, you know what I'm saying? What did you think about this? Because Jesse says it, and we'll get more into this with Piper as we move forward through 86 and into 87. Did you think off the bat that Jesse was kind of right, that Piper does lose a little bit of his edge being a fan favorite, or no? Or do you think it's just Piper and that's how he is?
No, I think Piper is just Piper.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's changed at all, at least not yet. Like, he's still doing Piper stuff, you know? He's still an asshole. He didn't come out to save Hogan. He just came out to beat the shit out of Adonis because they just beat the crap out of him on TV. No, I don't think he seemed to have lost any edge. I mean, you could argue maybe the edge was lost because of the time off. Maybe he got a little soft going to Hollywood because he comes back and lets himself be ambushed. But I don't think it's because he's like accepting the fans. But I did think it was a nice touch by Jesse to bring that up as a concern, because he's always been a big Piper backer. And now he's like, oh, I'm a little concerned, McMahon. Is he going to get soft? Like, I thought that was a nice way to do it without really hammering home that he's changing. Have his old friend kind of be worried that he's going to suddenly get soft. But, as we know, Jesse ends up being a Piper supporter, even as a face.
Yeah, I think that works out. And I think that Piper does kind of have this different look about him that kind of makes the fans think for a minute. Even in the kayfabe era, where heels are heels and faces are faces, but you're seeing two guys who were, just on each other in 1985, and now all of a sudden you're like, hmm. But Jesse helped you put it in your head. So I gave it a 2.5. Great match. I don't want people to – and we're talking about this. We shouldn't forget about Orndorff. He's still in the mix. And I still think you could argue that maybe with all of this going on, all this chaos with Adonis, Bobby, and all this, that somehow Orndorff, you know, pilfers the championship at some point in the next couple months. Because obviously, you know, we want to start thinking about what they're going to do for WrestleMania 3. So I think that's still a good bit of suspense still in the feud.
We're not going to spend another WrestleMania build with you trying to convince us that Hulk Hogan should lose his title, are we?
No.
Okay. Because we spent months of leading up to WrestleMania 2 with you trying to find anyone but the greatest choice to be world champion.
I know.
We're not doing it again.
No. This is different. No, because we know what the end game is.
I'm not prepared for you to argue that Siviafi should knock off Hogan to set up a big hot feud for WrestleMania 3.
You told Snuka not to make me great. No. Anyway, good show. A good match. And we got a lot left to go with that feud. So I believe we head backstage for more Mean Gene action. Mean Gene was a busy guy on this evening.
He was very busy, and yes, he is with Jake the Snake Roberts and Damian in the shower. They recap all the issues between the Snake and Ricky Steamboat to set up tonight's Snake Pit match. Of course, a rematch, basically, from the big event. But this is really the... You know, at the big event, we kind of talked about it, how it seemed like it was kind of the final showdown, but this really is the end of the feud between these two that started way back in May at our last Saturday's Main Event in Providence when the Snake knocked out Steamboat with a DDT on the floor. They battled at the big event. Steamboat won that one. And now we get a rematch here to culminate their feud. Another big Snake Pit blow-off. And remember, back at big event, it was teased that we'd have the showdown between Damian and Ricky's Dragon, and Gorilla ends up saying it was too dangerous to have them out there. And tonight we do get it. So I don't know if they teased it for that and then decided to save it for here or what happened. But tonight we do get Damian, and Steamboat's got the big, I don't know, what the fuck is that thing? Like an alligator? Crocodile?
Komodo dragon?
Is it a Komodo dragon? Is that what they look
like?
Yeah,
I think it's a Komodo dragon. An alligator.
I thought it was like a baby alligator.
Alligator around. I think it's supposed to be a Komodo dragon. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a baby gator. I don't know.
Yeah.
Was his mouth taped? I'm trying to remember. I don't think so. No, I think it's a Komodo dragon. I think it's what it's supposed to be.
Maybe it was a real dragon. It's going to breathe fire like Merlin. So Steamboat has the dragon out with him. And both men trade strikes off the bell. Steamboat wins the battle, landing chops and arm drags while picking up a near fall. Roberts was completely off balance as Steamboat's just owning the match. Steamboat goes up top looking for the big blow, but it's too early as Roberts is able to get to his knees up into the gut of the dragon as he landed. Both men were down and crawled toward their bags, but Snake sprinted over and cut Steamboat off, afraid of the dragon. Roberts follows with a hard gut buster for two and continues to pick apart the ribs with his focused offense, mixing in some chokes. Steamer tries to chop his way back into it, but Snake levels him with an uppercut to send him back down. Jake maintains control until Steamer gets a desperation crucifix into a pin for the victory. Jesse's all over the ref for being slow throughout this match and says, but then he counted fast for the final pin, which I don't think he was wrong, actually. It seemed like that's what was happening. After the bell, Jake knees Steamboat to the floor and batters him out there, ramming him over and over into the post. Back inside, Jake grabs Damian, but as he did that, Steamboat unleashed the dragon, and it was kind of a cool moment. It was a little hokey, but the two clash mid-ring with the reptiles, and Dragon is more powerful, and the snakes are sent scurrying. So it was kind of cool. They like ran up to each other and kind of clashed the two reptiles. Match was good. It wasn't their best, but the post-match was fun. The feud has been great, but it's really run its course. It's eaten up all summer, and I think it's time for both guys to kind of move on. I thought it was fitting to have the final match on Saturday's Main Event, where it all started. I thought that was cool, and I thought both guys really benefited from this feud in the end. I don't think either was hurt by it. I thought both guys came out looking good. I went 2.5 again on this one. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice fitting end to their feud.
I agree with you 100% on all those points. I also gave it 2.5. And more for Jake than Steamboat. Ricky's Ricky, and you know he fits in everywhere. And you already kind of knew on the house show circuit what was next for him, because obviously his next feud is coming shortly, and he was already working with that guy a few times throughout the year.
By the way, I'm looking at pictures. There's definitely a Komodo dragon.
Okay, that's what I thought. Jake is the one that really, I think, gained the benefit from this. He was already getting cheered. Shit, he was getting cheered even before this feud started. Because he was just so cool. He kind of had that aura about him, and kind of a unique character that even for 1986 WWF, you really couldn't totally wrap your head around. But he was still so good at what he did. And he was getting some legit cheers. Not like anti – like Steamboat wasn't getting booed. I just think people love both guys and were loving the feud. I love the line. and go back to selling encyclopedias. I didn't sell any encyclopedias. Well, you couldn't do that either, huh? That was good. That was a good line delivered by Jake in the shower. Yeah, no, it was great. No, this match was not the best, but it was still pretty good. And yeah, we've got both guys have other things they got to do right now. Obviously, the creative, the bookers need to start thinking about some type of face turn for Jake because he's already getting cheers. So I think
they have to look at it like who's left for him to feud with on the face side, right? So,
right.
If we look at it, Hogan's busy, right? So it's probably not going to be him. Andre is gone right now, not around. You know, whatever. He was doing the machine stuff, and now he's pretty much gone. Steamboat he's done with. Tito is kind of sunk back a bit. He's not really... Jake is kind of past him on the ladder, right? Really, because he's really going to feud with Tito at this point.
Right.
You know, Bruno's not around. Like, who else at Piper's turned face, but he's busy? Kind of like, who else is really out there on the face side for him to really get involved in a good angle with?
I know. There's really no... The mid-card right now is kind of in a state of transition creatively because you've got faces turning heel. And right.
I mean, you could have maybe said like a Haku, but he's doing the tag thing now.
Haku.
Right? Like who else is really, you know, but if you look at the heel side, you kind of got some guys out there that maybe he could, you know, have a feud with. So he's in an interesting time. It's coming off of this, with this one ending, you kind of wonder, you'd be wondering like what's next for him? Where's he headed next?
Yeah, I'm trying to even look at the guys that are on this MSG, this Boston Garden card, and Tito? And really not a lot of baby faces right now, to be honest with you.
No, it's not.
You know? So, I think that's on their mind right now in terms of, for Jake. Steamboat, obviously, he's ready for what he's got next. There's no doubt about that. So, but this was a great match. I enjoyed it a lot. I would put this as a top three feud of 1986. I'm curious Kelly's opinion when Kel comes back. I think it's a top three feud of the calendar year.
I think it would have to be, right? With what are your other options? Hogan Orndorff so far.
Bulldog's Dream Team, yeah. Maybe. We'll talk more about them in a few minutes.
Savage Tito.
Certainly not Savage Steel.
Yeah.
You're looking at strictly regional house shows. Savage Tito is top three because every match they've had has been fucking amazing. So
yeah, if you're looking at it from just a TV basis, maybe Savage Steel's up there. But yeah, we'll talk about it when we get to December. We'll do our year in review.
So by the way, your run times. Graham didn't have any. I had 10 minutes on Hogan Orndorff, but that seems very generic. I don't know if it's exactly 10 minutes. Jake and Steamboat was 6:19, which seems about right. And, so Steamboat gets the win, but Jake loses nothing, and things look good for both those guys. So
yeah. It was interesting, too, to see Steamboat, a big event in here, kind of get the clean win, like, both times. Like, I mean, really definitive end to the feud, you know? Usually you might get, like, a DQ in there or whatever to protect Jake a bit, but they didn't seem to care too much. I think they thought Jake was good enough that he didn't really need to be protected, so... all right, so Gene talks to Hogan about what went down earlier tonight. Hogan thanks his fans for the support and then talks some shit to Orndorff while telling Piper to stay out of his way as well. We then, in a great bit, go out to a limo where Iron Sheik and Slick have arrived. Jesse meets them out there and gives them some props. Slick says he wants Sheik to be happy, and he says he'll be the next champion of the world. Jesse asks if they're okay with a sub for an opponent for Iron Sheik, and Slick says Roddy Piper is a coward if he doesn't compete tonight. So that was a neat little character bit. You know, kind of getting Slick over to the national audience. Of course, we saw him at MSG, but our first introduction to the Dr. Style Slick, the first African-American manager in WWF history, trained in Texas All-Star Wrestling, moved to Central States in Kansas City, taking on the Slick persona, debuted in the WWF in September of 86, about a month before this. With Freddie Blassie's health in decline, he was slowly phased out, and Slick, of course, purchased an interest in Blassie's stable before taking over full-time. So... the Slickster does lead out the Iron Sheik for that match with Roddy Piper. And, of course, Piper had taken that time off from WWF. We haven't seen him, right? Is this our first time seeing him? We didn't see him in MSG yet.
Piper?
Yeah.
No, Piper's so. Definitely not been around.
All right, so Piper came back in August to find his popular Piper's Pit segment replaced by the Flower Shop, hosted by Adrian Adonis. Even Piper's own bodyguard, Cowboy Bob Orton, had switched over to the new segment. And like we had talked about last month, he, of course, was now being paid more by Adonis. So he's wearing the pink hat and backing him up instead. Piper began crashing the show from week to week, leading to a confrontation between the two. Adonis, Orton, and Don Morocco then teamed up on Piper and assaulted him, injuring his knee in the process. Piper got his revenge by hobbling out and destroying the flower shop with a baseball bat. That leads us to this match here, where Sheik and Slick await in the ring, and Pedro Morales is out, much to the anger of Parf. And but before the match starts, Piper hobbles out in a crutch, talks to Pedro, and tells him to leave, which he does, says, fuck this, I'm out. Sheik attacks before the bell, but Piper smacks him with the crutch and punches away. Slick runs interference, and Sheik goes to work on the injured leg, goes for a suplex, but Piper blocks it into a small package for the win. Piper grabs the crutch and threatens Sheik, who runs away. Jesse says Piper may be faking it, just so he can carry around a crutch. No match here, but a great moment that really helps push Piper's face turn. A hot segment. I just went dud for the match because, I mean, it's really just a squash. But the segment itself surrounding it was really, really well done. And I like the usage here. I like the way it all played out with starting early in the night where he's, you know, looking like he's not going to make it, even though he keeps saying he's going to. And then he comes out and gets the win anyway and uses the crutch and basically shows he's out here to fuck people up and not worry about anything else. What'd you think of this one?
I gave it a dud, but not because the match was bad. The segment served its purpose. That's all we really needed. I feel bad for Sheik. Cameraman, zoom in! But I feel bad that he had the one that had to eat this, but whatever. Probably went out and had did a couple bumps with Piper after the match. But it served its purpose. That's all it was really needed to do. It was there to prove Piper's a badass son of a bitch. And, kind of gain a little more face cachet with the audience. And which he did. People just like cheering him anyway. I think the actual term face turn here, fans dug him anyway, even when he was a heel. So this is just transitioning to other types of opponents is really what it comes down to. So,
right.
And the segment's great. So.
And this ends up being really the last time we see Adonis for a while. He is, and this is stuff I kind of learned recently anyway, I wasn't aware of. They do the elbow injury here to write him out. Did he fail a drug test, you remember? Or was it just, was he just fired? Do you remember? Did he leave? Do you remember the deal? I'm trying to find. Oh, right here. He was briefly fired right before MSG, but after the TV taping. So this had already been recorded. He was already fired at this point.
Yeah, this was recorded on the 13th. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was fired right after that. I think it was for drugs. And then he, so Orton had subbed in on TV, and then you get the Sheik stuff here, and Piper was actually moved into a feud with Morocco and Orton on the house shows, and then they decided to bring back Adonis to keep things going. So,
well, remember that Orton-Billy Jack match that
right,
we
was
had
supposed to be Adonis.
Was supposed to be Adonis, so they were already swapping out at that point.
Yeah, so he, Adonis, it's interesting to think that, because we know, you know, where the feud goes with Piper and Adonis, that imagine him just being shit-canned here and never coming back. Like, the lack of closure and what we'd get from that feud would have never happened. It wouldn't have been the same with Piper just feuding with Orton and Morocco. It wouldn't have had nearly as much heat. So obviously they had filmed this attack and then used it to explain him being gone. And as we'll see next week on our show, Piper references it and basically says, like, you're not going to see him again. I ran him off. So it looked like they were definitely planning to move on without him.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too. Which is kind of a bummer, but he was doing... If he was on the Junkyard Dog, blowing pork rinds diet, then obviously he had to go. But he must have done something to make amends. But we'll get more into Adonis as time moves on. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we take a break? Because we obviously been hustling along. And great show so far, I think, JR. Great show. Another solid Saturday Night's Main Event effort thus far.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a great one.
Yep. And we got more good stuff to come when we return. Two matches to go, including our World Tag Team Championship national rematch from WrestleMania 2. These two teams have wrestled each other on our house show circuit. We've seen both teams and singles, but this is the big national tag team title rematch from WrestleMania 2. And more to come from that. But first, let's take a break with Adonis and the pork rinds, because
I can't believe he's beat up that fat old lady.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
All right, Nation, we are back talking the October 86 Saturday Night's Main Event. Justin and Scott here alone. It's odd, almost odd being alone sometimes after we usually have someone with us on all these other shows. Like, we were alone for, like, how many episodes? Probably, you know, 380 of, like, the 460.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now it's weird, just the two of us. But, you know, it was also weird, Scott, not being in Brooklyn this past week and after being there the past 2 years. We had a good crew here. Inside the PT Man studios, eating some boneheads. We even got Cowboy Senior out to watch the show, so he was into it. Came for the wings, but you were there, Scott, without me, with your friends and lovers, Anthony and Greeny and George, and just wasn't the same. But you know, still a good time, I'm sure. So speaking of friends and lovers, that takes us to our pop culture corner with Scott Criscola.
Mm-hmm. And Double A, Armento even mentioned in the car when we were driving home that, you know, he acknowledges he enjoyed being Vince's limo driver.
Oh, yeah?
So I almost got off the exit, pulled up next to the strip club and said, well, then do your job.
Right, go out there and get it done. You should have picked up Claire out in L.A.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been a good ride. All right, so as you know, as you're listening, Friends and Lovers by Carl Anderson, not Machine Gun, and Gloria Loring is your number two song, because the number one song is the same one we had last week at our house show, and that is Stuck With You, Huey Lewis and the News. Still your number one song in the land, as it is a Saturday, so the Billboard Top 100 came out today, so this is brand new, fresh. So Stuck With You by Huey Lewis and the News, still number one, the song you're hearing. Friends and Lovers by Carl Anderson and Gloria Loring, number two. Our girl, Janet, JR, slowly getting her career going with When I Think of You, which is actually a fantastic song, by the way. At number four, Don't Forget Me When I'm Gone by Glass Tiger, moving up the charts. Number five, Dreamtime, that mysterious solo cut by Daryl Hall that I never remembered. Number six, Two of Hearts by Stacey Q. I'm trying to remember that song myself.
Just a motto.
Stacey Q. Yeah, exactly. Number seven, Throwing It All Away by Genesis, which is a tremendous song on a tremendous album. Number eight, Walk This Way by Run DMC, of course, with the help of Aerosmith, as they kind of resurrected their career with that song. Number nine, Typical Male by Tina Turner. That was Fort D'Amato. And number 10, Dancing on the Ceiling by the great Lionel Richie. He's playing Boston tonight, by the way, with your girl Mariah.
But the Indians are playing Boston tonight.
No, Lionel is playing.
I know. All right. Aaron Hicks has hit a home run, so there you go.
He doesn't look like Lionel. Aaron Hicks with a big jerry curl would be pretty badass. Anyway, there's your top 10 for today, October 4th, 1986. All right. Three movies, JR, all actually did very well at the box office the day before, that came out October 3rd. Here we go. First movie made $2 million. It actually bombed at the box office because the budget was $35 million. It only made $2 million. It is a romantic comedy titled Playing for Keeps.
Oh, okay.
Which is what we're going to do in a few moments when we take the field, but that's in a moment. Playing for Keeps.
Did it have that song? This is Playing for Keeps. What song is that? Why is that line?
Oh, that's Phil Collins.
Yeah. What song?
I never thought I'd love you. Keeps.
We're going to end the show with it, whatever it is. I'll find it.
it's pseudo-yacht rock, I guess.
18-year-old Danny D'Angelo, an alumnus of Benjamin Franklin High School in New York City, lives in an apartment with his mother and charitable sister named Marie. One day in July, he discovers they have inherited the Hotel Majestic, a long-closed facility in Bethany, Pennsylvania, and along with $8,000 in unpaid taxes. Danny's great-aunt Teresa once owned the place but died before she could pay them off. And unknown to them, a film called Pritchard Chemicals is willing, a firm called Pritchard Chemicals, willing to acquire the property for its Fox River project and turn it into a chemical waste dump, starring Daniel Giordano, Matthew Penn, Marissa Tomei, Jimmy Bayo, Robert Milley. I don't really recognize anyone else.
Marissa Tomei, huh?
She's the only one that I recognize. She was Tracy, who, let's see if it says who Tracy is. No, I don't see who Tracy is, so probably not a huge part. Yeah, it says then little known Marissa Tomei has a supporting role. So
okay. The second, the number two movie of the weekend, it made $21,458,229, a comedy titled Tough Guys. It did not start Hacksaw Jim Dunn.
Here we go. Harry Doyle and Archie Long are gangsters who served a 30-year prison sentence. Isn't Harry Doyle the major league guy?
No, that's Harry Coyle. Oh, no, it is Harry Doyle. You're right. Yeah.
Don't laugh at me. Harry Doyle and Archie Long are gangsters who served a 30-year prison sentence for hijacking a Southern Pacific train called the Gold Coast Flyer, ready to collect Social Security. The parole officer, Richie Evans, who seems to be more of a fan of historically notable criminals than a representative of law enforcement, meets Harry and Archie at the gates and offers them a ride. Meanwhile, Leon B. Little, an elderly hitman with bad eyesight who has outstanding contract on them, immediately tries to kill them. Harry and Archie manage to get away, and hijinks ensue. Starring Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas, Alexis Smith, Dana Carvey, Eli Wallach, Billy Barty, Nathan Davis, Grant Alexander, and on and on.
Billy Barty's a midget. Pretty decent, pretty good cast there. That was just, let me see, Dana Carvey? I don't know if he was on SNL yet. He was getting there. Because 86, like through 88 was right when the good when the good class started coming in, Dana Carvey, Kevin Nealon, Dennis Miller, Norm Macdonald.
Well, this was his big break, it says. Same year, he became a household name. So it looks like probably that right around when this came out was probably when he joined.
Yeah. No, it was about those couple years that they really loaded up that class. Because the mid... Other
than 86 Murphy, to 93, he was there, so...
Yeah, the early... Other than Eddie Murphy, the early 80s of SNL was pretty fucking brutal. Anyway, and the number one movie of the weekend, a drama, it made $31,853,080 called, this is actually a pretty well-known movie, Children of a Lesser God.
Sorry.
They get a Meryl Streep in it, if I remember correctly.
Caught up in the Dana Carvey rabbit hole there. Children of a Lesser God. It's a 1986 American romantic drama film. Sarah Norman is a troubled young deaf woman working as a janitor at a school for the deaf and hard of hearing in New England. An energetic new teacher, James Leeds, arrives at the school and encourages her to set aside her insular life by learning how to speak aloud. And it stars Marlee Matlin, of course, William Hurt. That was it all comes together. He was the voice of the dragon in Merlin, so there you go, Jack Gamble. All comes together tonight. Piper Laurie, Philip Bosco, Linda Bove, and that's it.
Okay. So, yeah, Marlee Matlin, of course, the well-known deaf actress. Mm-hmm. Big role for her. So that was your top three movies that came out on Friday. All right. Major League Baseball, of course, first weekend of October, the season slowly winding down. The Yankees and Red Sox played a doubleheader. Obviously, the Red Sox had already clinched the division by this point. But the Yankees swept the doubleheader at Fenway, 5-3 in the first game. Bob Tewksbury with his ninth win. And won the second game 3-1, and Dave Rigetti saved both games, saves 45 and 46 to set a major league record at that point. I'll tell you something, JR, and I used to say this to my brother all the time. In the second game, Dennis Rasmussen got the win for the Yankees. And I argue that if Clemens didn't have that ridiculous year in 86, I mean, Rasmussen went 18-6 for the Yankees. I argue he might have won the Cy Young in 86. Anyway.
Well, if they knew Clemens was juicing, he may have.
Possibly, although Clemens didn't, his head didn't look like a fucking pumpkin in 86 yet, but the Mets were playing out the string as well. They beat the Pirates 6-1 at Shea. Bob Ojeda won his 18th game, but Jesse Orosco his 21st save, and we'll just say it, even though he's not here, we'll kick dirt in his face.
Fuck you,
the
Kelly.
Mets. Actually, the Mets, actually, they had a doubleheader too at Shea, and the Mets swept it. 6-1 and 5-2, they beat the Pirates. The Blue Jays, where the fuck the Blue Jays? Mariners and the Dodgers, Twins, Royals, Phillies. They didn't play. It was weird. The Blue Jays have a Saturday off. It's like it's fucking odd. Anyway, they didn't play for some reason. Maybe they got rained out. Anyway,
yeah,
the Yankees. Yeah, the Red Sox, your four teams that make the playoffs. So the American League Championship Series is the Boston Red Sox against the California Angels, and the National League Championship Series, the New York Mets against the Houston Astros. And, of course, that year, pretty epic, the NL West clinching game for the Astros, Mike Scott no-hit the Giants. And that was so he threw a no-hitter and they won the division on the same night. So that was kind of neat. A harbinger of things to come for the Mets in that series, I'll tell you. So the next time we have our update, we'll be in the baseball postseason.
Whoopee. Okay. Speaking of heads that look like pumpkins, by the way, I hope you're growing your beard back. It was very disturbing pictures over the weekend. Wasn't a big fan.
Well, it's growing. It was just thinner, but no, the beard's there. It was just the stubble was a little thinner, but speaking of heads like a pumpkin, what do you say? I'm gonna take HGH. Speaking of HGH, it's probably legal back then. All right, it is time to take the field for Week 5 of the 1986 NFL season. Let me go to. Now, of course, as we talked about, JR.
Yes.
Mr. Kelly Nelson gave us his pick, so you guys can go head-to-head, even on the shows that he is not here.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we begin at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, where the New York Football Giants took on the St. Louis Cardinals.
I'm going to go with the Giants.
Kelly did as well, and you're both correct. 13-6, the Giants get the victory.
Yes.
And I think that was one of those where LT probably sacked Neil Lomax like fucking 47 times. All right, next.
And then he hit up a dime sack after.
Yeah, that's a dime sack. Yeah. More like a fucking dollar sack. Next, let's head to Soldier Field in Chicago, where the defending world champion Chicago Bears host the Minnesota Vikings.
I'll go with the Bears.
The Bears. So did Kelly, and you are both correct. Walter Payton with 108 yards rushing. Bears pitch a shutout, 23-0 over the Vikings. Next, let's head down to Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta. Mr. Campbell, little baby Chad, although he wasn't alive yet, and his Falcons take on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I'll go with the Eagles on this one.
Jaws throws for 237 and another shutout. Eagles win 16-0.
Did Kelly take them too?
Yeah.
Bastard.
Next, we go to Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh. The Steelers hosting the Cleveland Browns. And it was usually a pretty good fist fight before the Ravens stepped in that slot.
Yeah, I'll go with the Browns on this one.
Kelly took the Steelers, and it goes to Mr. Kozar and the Browns, yes. 27-24. So that you get the win. Kelly does not get that one.
Take that, you Canadian trash.
Speaking of trash, let's go to Foxborough for a segue. The New England Patriots, your defending AFC champions, hosting the Miami Dolphins, two of JR's favorite teams.
I'll go with Mr. Marino on this one.
Pats win 34-7.
Ugh.
Kelly took the Pats. Marino only threw for 167, so the Pats defense was on that day.
Yeah. Let's go to Spygate. Start early.
Raymond Barry. Were there VHS tapes, Raymond Barry?
Tony Eason deflating those footballs, asshole.
Let us go to the Superdome in New Orleans. The Saints hosting the Washington Redskins.
Skins.
You both took the Skins. You both get the win. Jay Schrader throws for $170. Washington wins 14-6. We go to Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, where the Chiefs host the Los Angeles Raiders.
Chiefs at home.
He also took the Chiefs, and you're both wrong. Raiders get the win, 24-17.
See, he listened to me last week and burnt him.
About Arrowhead, yes. Next, let's go to Lambeau Field in Green Bay. A little intra-conference battle as the Packers host the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'll go with the Bengals on this one.
Kelly took the Packers, and it is the Bengals with the win.
Yes.
34-28 at Lambeau. Let's go to the Silverdome in Pontiac. Interesting venue. As the Lions host the Houston Oilers.
I'll go with the Oilers on this one.
Kelly took the Lions, and even though Warren Moon threw for 398 yards, the Oilers can only muster 13 points. Lions win 24-13. Let's go to Mile High Stadium in Denver. The Broncos host the Dallas Cowboys.
I'll go with the Broncos.
So did he, and you are correct. Steve Pelure threw for 271. This is the Cowboys weren't. This is right at the beginning of of the end for the Tom Landry era Cowboys. Broncos win 29-14. Let's go to Candlestick. The San Francisco 49ers taking on the Indianapolis Colts.
I'll go with the Niners in this one.
You both did, and you're both right. Joe Montana did not play again, though, but Steve Kemp threw for 274, and the Niners win 35-14. Let's go to Anaheim, where the LA Rams host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The Rams.
Kelly also took the Rams, and this game went into overtime. Rams win 26-20. By the way, Eric Dickerson, 207 yards rushing.
Oof.
Let's go to the Meadowlands. The Jets, Jets taking on the Buffalo Bills. No sexy here.
I'll go with the Jets in this one. Picked against them last week.
Kelly took the Jets as well. Kenny O'Brien throws for 298. Jets win by a point, 14-13.
Good.
I found your next throwback jersey, by the way. The great Johnny Hector.
There you go.
Rushed for 117.
I don't think I'm wearing anything Jets related this year, but we'll see.
You wore Wesley, though. That was a good era. It's not like you're wearing a scrub jab now.
I'm going to have to break up my Pennington. Sadly, those are the glory days.
And finally, that will go to Monday night at the Kingdome in Seattle. The Seahawks host the San Diego Chargers.
All right. I'll go with San Diego.
Let's see. Kelly took Seattle, and it was the Seahawks with a big blowout win, 33-7.
All right. Kelly wins the week 11-10. Last week we tied 8-8. So
okay.
We did it strong this week, me and him.
Yep. So just looking ahead, our next show is the The next show coming up is the October 20th house show from the Garden. So that looks like it'll be week. Let me see if I get this right. It looks like it'll be week. It'll be week 7 because that's a Monday night. So the day before will be week 7 of the NFL season. Right, so
very good.
We will get ready. So good week in the NFL. And that is it for. Why am I closing this? And that is it for your pop culture report. Let's get back to Richfield.
We head backstage for a few minutes here. Me and Gene talking to the Dream Team and Johnny V about the big tag title match tonight. We get some clips from WrestleMania 2, because if you remember this is televised. We've had done that. I guess, did they fight on Saturday Night Live after 2? Or was it before 2?
Bulldog's Dream Team.
It was before, right? Because after they fought Sheik and Volkov, right? In that 2 out of 3. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I'll double check.
Gene chats with Roddy Piper, who throws a cup of soda on himself and says he does what he wants to do and he's proud to be insane. He mocks Adrian Adonis, calls him fat, and says he's not going to sit there and take his shit, basically. We go to earlier where Gene talked to the Bulldogs. He said they were underestimated at WrestleMania 2 and the Dream Team is in for the beating of their lives here tonight. Of course, the rematch from WrestleMania 2 and a best 2 out of 3 falls match. Good spot to showcase this, reminding everyone of WrestleMania 2. And, of course, always smart to showcase the Bulldogs. And looks to maybe be the final crack at the belts for the Dream Team here for a while. We'll see. Vince says this is 2 out of 3 falls, European rules, which shocks Jesse. Can't believe it. Valentine and Dynamite trade hard blows to start as Jesse's mocking Cleveland. Hammer stomps away and tags in Beefcake, who gets a nice suplex and starts to work the leg. Dynamite escapes and tags in Davey, who goes to work on the arm. Beefcake turns the tide with a hammerlock slam and tags Hammer, who clubs Davey with a blow off the middle rope for 2. Davey fires back, but Hammer makes a tag and Beefcake slugs away. Beefer follows with a knee for 2, and the Dream Team keeps quick tagging and laying the wood until Davey escapes and tags out. Dynamite comes in and strong and unloads on Hammer until Hammer catches him in an inverted atomic drop and follows with a shoulder breaker. The Dream Team settle back in to control with their tags and grinding offense. The Hammer finally breaks down Dynamite and locks in a figure 4. Beefer cuts off Davey and eventually Dynamite submits to give the Dream Team the first fall. Jesse rants about the European rules as we take a break, saying the Dream Team should be champions. Gene updates us on Adonis' injury, saying he may have a separated shoulder, and we see the clip from earlier, which shows what could be an even worse injury than they're thinking. Second fall starts with Hammer punishing Dynamite's leg, and the Dream Team continues to quick tag and punish Dynamite with rugged power offense, picking up near falls. Dynamite dodges an elbow off the middle rope, tags in Davey, who comes in and cleans house with authority. Davey took Hammer over with a nice vertical suplex for 2 and then drops him with a power slam, but Beefcake comes in to prevent the pin. Davey quickly hoists Beefcake on his shoulders, and Dynamite leaps off Beefcake's back onto Hammer with a headbutt to tie up the match at 1-1. The third fall opens with Dynamite and Hammer circling and locking up until Hammer goes right out that dinged-up knee to take control. Dynamite fires right back and hits a tight snap suplex. Hammer dodges a falling headbutt and starts to bring some heavy shots. Jesse has an update, says Adonis suffered a shattered elbow and that Orton and Morocco are going to make Piper pay. So there you go. You can see it coming where Adonis pretty much being, you know, written out the injury, and they're already saying Piper's in trouble with Morocco and, yep, Adonis, and Orton. Yep. So Dream Team continue to control and mix in some double teams, grabbing a close near fall. Hammer really keeps working over the leg of Dynamite, but Dynamite dodges a figure 4 and tags out. Davey and Beefcake meet in the middle of the ring, and Beefcake lands the first shots, grabbing a near fall. Continues to control and tags in Hammer, who picks up a near fall as well. Things eventually break down, and during the chaos, Davey takes Beefcake over with a fisherman suplex to get the win and retain the straps. Jesse says the Dream Team is in real trouble for future title shots after the loss here. A really damn good match, as usual. Lots of hard-hitting offense, back and forth. I do think it would have been better as a one-fall match with lots of build, because it kind of dragged a bit during that third fall. I would have preferred not having Dynamite tap to the figure 4, and then just go to a hot finish at the end. I think it would have been a lot better. The Dream Team's officially pretty much cooked. Bulldogs continue to have a strong reign as champs, notching another big win on national TV. I went 3 stars in this one.
I did as well. They wrestled on that Phoenix Saturday's main event when the Dream Team was the champions. And then on the May one, the Bulldogs fought Sheik and Volkov.
So. Okay.
This is a fun match. I liked it a lot. But I do agree with you that I think the 2 out of 3 kind of lagged it. I think you could have had a 13. But by the way, the official time was 13:09. And I think you could have had a 13:09 with one fall. Because I think 2 out of 3s just kind of kill. Because, you're trying to book a match around a stip. And a stip like that, particularly when you got guys that could really move their asses, I think it kind of takes away from the athletes themselves. I think two out of three falls is good when you got kind of like a lumbering team and you kind of need to give them their pace. But this is a situation where I really think that just give them 13 minutes and let them roll. We all know, I mean, we've said it all year that even though 85 was his, you know, IC title year, you could argue that just pound for pound, almost every Greg Valentine match we've watched this year, he's been fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a top three guy in the company, and he does it again here. If this is the official end, I want to ask you, JR, of the Dream Team. I know they wrestle a little bit after, but this is like their official end is like probably the top dog, you know, the top heel dogs. Kind of categorize or kind of wrap up your thoughts on Beefcake from when they won it in Philly in whatever it was, I guess September 85, till now. Have you really seen progression out of Beefcake?
Yeah. I mean, in those early ones, he was barely in, it felt like. You know, he'd come in, land a couple shots, and get out. And it feels like he's in the ring more now. It feels like he's not, doesn't look as lost in the ring. Like, it seems like he kind of knows when to come in, when to tag in. In those early ones, it felt like he was kind of being directed what to do, especially before they were Dream Team. Remember, they were teaming up in mid-85.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think there's definite progression. We'll see next month. He has a singles match, so we'll see how he does there. But no, I think he's definitely improved. I think at the very least, his confidence has improved, and he carries himself with more confidence and seems to have a game plan out there. It doesn't seem like Valentine's kind of directing him around the ring. So I think that's been a big plus for him. He's clearly come a long way. As far as them as a team, they've had a really good year as the de facto, you know, number one heel team. I think it's time for them to move out of the way, especially with the Bulldogs continuing to be champions. We really don't have, I mean, I guess the Rougeaus and the Bees are coming up, which is good, because we kind of need other face teams right now in the mix. So, I mean, you could have them linger around, I guess, if you're one of those teams, but I think it's probably best to get Valentine back in the mid-card where he could do some damage and let Beefcake see if he's learned enough to get out on his own. So I think as a team, they're kind of shot. I'm not advocating a turn for Beefcake per se. They could just kind of start wrestling solo and still have tag stuff here and there. So we'll see if they do that. But no, I think they've had a good run, and it's been good for Beefcake, and it gave Valentine something to do without marginalizing him. We've said this before, like after he lost the IC title, he could have easily just kind of faded, just kind of hung around the mid card having random matches, but they really gave him something substantial to cling to for another year, to have more gold and to be the premier heel team. So I thought that was a nice way to give Valentine something to do while also letting him mentor Beefcake.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just curious what your thoughts were. He definitely matured a lot. I mean, Valentine's still the alpha dog, but Beefcake definitely matured a lot in this stretch. And it didn't hurt to have a good face team like the Bulldogs to kind of feed off of for most of the year. But I agree. I think they're done, and I think we need different baby face teams, and obviously we certainly need a new number one contender heel team for the Bulldogs. I think we kind of know who that is, but we'll save it for as we move down the line in the rest of 86. So I gave it 3 stars. Fun match, but I would have eschewed the 2 out of 3 and just had one fall for 1309.
Oh, me too.
And rolled with that. I think it would have been really good. Okay. But we got Mean Gene again. Mean Gene again.
Yeah, we do. He, hang on right here. So Mean Gene chats with the Wizard, Kim Chi, and Kamala. We get a bunch of rambling and nonsense, as you would expect. And Scott's our first time seeing Kamala back here. Of course, we saw the Wizard with Sika last month, but this is Kamala's return to WWF. His initial run, managed by Skandor Akbar and Freddie Blassie, now has took some time off. Of course, he had that big cage match with Andre the Giant back in the day. Now has a masked handler named Kim Shi, and managed by the Wizard, who, like we said, we saw a week ago, talked about him then. Kamala, character portrayed by James Harris from Mississippi. Harris had been a burglar in his teens, trying to help support his family after his father was shot dead. After being asked to leave town by local police, it's like a movie, leave town by local police, he moved to Florida and then later to Michigan, where he met Bobo Brazil and began training. His pro career began in 1978, when by many different names, before moving to the UK to wrestle for several years. While there, he continued to build his skills under the name Mississippi Mauler. When he returned to the U.S. to Memphis, Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett had him change his gimmick to one where he'd be known by the remainder of his career, taking on the role of the Ugandan giant Kamala, an African cannibal covered in face and body paint and a loincloth. He wrestled in Mid-South, Memphis, and World Class before making his appearance in 1984 in the WWF. Like we said, he left and then now returns with the Wizard. And tonight takes on Lanny Poffo, who has this fucking terrible hair. I mean, just awful hair.
What is the deal with that? Oh, my God.
Shave your head or something, man. Like, he's
looks
just
like
got
B,
this...
It looks like B. Arthur before she got gray.
It is terrible. This is fucking perm. It's
fucking
brutal.
Golden Girl.
At least when he had it kind of long, like, it looked okay. But it, you know, kind of like a poodle haircut. But now it's just... I mean, it literally is just a short perm. Just no good at all. And he's chucking frisbees around as always. Kamala's led out by Wizard and Kim Chi. Wizard expands a stable of crazy men. Kamala goes right at Poffo, but Lanny dodges a chop and flips around. Kamala just keeps coming right at him, mauling him in the corner. The crowd seems impressed and awed by Kamala's agility and presence. Like, I thought it was kind of a unique reaction he was getting. Kamala lands some kicks and chops as he just dominates Poffo. Poffo wiggles free and peppers some right hands to the gut, but Kamala ends all that with a thrust to the throat. Slams him and then splashes him for the win. Just a squash. I thought Kamala looked pretty good here. Poffo did his job. Kamala and his posse, I thought they had a strong heel presence, like the three of them coming out. It was intimidating. I could see at this point, like, thinking this guy's going to be a legit threat to people because he had a menacing look. Wizard and Kim Chi have this, you know, menacing look as well, and you pair him up with Sika, and all of a sudden you kind of got something cooking. I went a dud for the squash, but I enjoyed it enough.
Yeah, I mean, it was a dud. I mean, Lanny's hair gives it a minus fucking 40 stars, but yeah. Kamala, of course, and you know, Mean Gene did say welcome back. Of course, Kamala was here, as you mentioned, earlier in the decade. Memorable feud with Andre. They had a big Maple Leaf Gardens cage match in, like, I don't know, 82, I think, or something. And it was just a chance to get another big heel and, you know, maybe a future Hogan opponent, something like that. So not much more to say here. Good to see... again, the Wizard, former King Curtis. Maybe he got an upgrade here from having, you know, broken down fucking Sika. But, yeah, that's it. It was a good ending to the show to, you know, another heel.
Yeah, squeeze the match in, you know, under the gun. Typical Saturday Night Live formula, right? We open with the hot match, and we kind of work our way back down and then back up, and then we close with just jamming a match in at the end here. Exactly. We're starting to really see that format coming to fruition on Saturday Night's Main Event, where everything's kind of coming together on how they want to run the show. So, all right, time for the awards, Scott. So let's start here with our match of the night. I thought that we had three legit contenders. I went with Bulldog's Dream Team, though, because I had that a notch higher grade-wise. And, you know, they've won it before, and they win it again.
I gave it 3 stars, so I agree with you, although the other two are obviously, we only were half star off with the other two, but right. I'll go with the title tag title match.
This is the third time they've won match of the night, by the way. That March Chinese main event, WrestleMania 2 in here. So great chemistry.
Yeah. Absolutely great chemistry. Yep.
Just like you and your friends and lovers. All right, our cousin Junior is our worst match of the night. I didn't think there was really like a strong contender. Like, we had a couple duds, but they weren't really duds. I just want Kamala Poffo. I mean, if we have to pick one, that was the worst. But even that wasn't bad. I mean, it served its purpose.
Yeah, they weren't duds because the matches were bad. They were duds because they weren't really that long. Right. And, you know, it wasn't like a, you know, fucking Rene Goulet, you know, Pedro Morales dud.
No, it wasn't. Fucking Tony Garea.
It was an enhancement. Yeah, those were enhancement things. So, but yeah, I mean, we'll do the Kamala match only because worst match should go with worst hair. So, and that's definitely.
I just created a new word, by the way. I'm going to use from now on stone bagging, a combination of stonewalling and sandbagging. So
stone bagging.
MVP of the night, or I'm sorry, the Hogan Award, of course, that we renamed last episode. I went with Roddy Piper tonight. I thought he was great in everything he did. I thought the attack early on was good. The match was good. His promos were good. Everything.
Yep, I agree. No, this is a big night for Piper because he's turning the corner from heel to babyface. So, I agree.
All right. Worst worker of the night, the Uncle Elmer. Another tough one. I went with Poffo. He looked great out there. He was kind of stumbling around a lot. You know, on paper, you think maybe Kamala, but I actually thought he did a nice job. Like, I thought he did his role well. Looked menacing, was a good heel. So, I don't know. To me, Poffo was the weakest of anyone on the card tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he was wobbling around because his hair was taking up too much weight on his fucking head.
Right. Yeah,
he couldn't get the equilibrium.
All right, moment of the night, best moment. I went with Piper's crutch attack. I thought that was the hottest part of the night.
Yeah, he smacked Adonis pretty hard in the arm, so I go with that too.
Okay. And the Arcidi Award for the most juiced up of the evening, I went with the British Bulldogs.
There was really nobody else. Hogan, it's hard to give Hogan that award because Hogan literally looks the same in every match.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to give Hogan the juiced award unless, you know, it's Hogan and a bunch of midgets, right. I guess. But, yeah, I mean, Dynamite always looks like he's fucking busting out of his skin. So I agree.
The Bulldogs have given Arcidi a run here for for winning the most times. I'd say they've won Let's go back to 85. One, Dynamite won, actually, well, they won all the way back in April of 85. They won one. Sorry. So one, two, Dynamite won alone at the Classic. That's three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Eight total. Two of those are partial. Kelly didn't vote for them. Just I voted for them alone on one. Me and you voted. So, I mean, part of eight times they've been. We might have to rename this to the Bulldogs Award.
Fucking Dynamite Award.
All right. And the final grade of the evening out of a 10. I've been pretty high overall in the signings main events. The last one I went with a 6.5. Before that, 6.5. Before that, 6. And for that 6.5. So I've pretty much been right around that range. And Scott, tonight I'm going 7. I thought this is the best signings main event we've seen. I want to see what I gave those earliest ones. 5.5 and 5 and then 6.5. So 6.5 was my previous high. So I'm on record now saying this is the best signings main event to date. I thought it was really good. There was nothing bad, nothing dragged. The matches were all good. The ones that weren't had a defined purpose. We had a lot of storyline advancement. Jesse was back. Just the whole thing was really, really good. An enjoyable hour change. So I really like this one. Definitely one of the best shows we've seen so far. I think this is the highest grade I've given overall. I gave WrestleMania 1 and 8, but that was kind of an honorary. And then September 85, I gave a 7.
September 85 house show, you
so
gave a 7.
It. This is tied. I mean, if you kind of punt out WrestleMania 1, which I don't think is a legit 8, this is probably tied for the best show we've seen so far.
Well, no, I gave it a 10, and it's not a legit 10. That's more of a kind of a commemorative 10.
It's a Bulldogs 10, a little juiced
up. It's a Bulldog. Yeah. Well, let's see. My favorite science main event of all time is still that March 1st, the Phoenix one with Bundy and all that, and I gave that a 7. So I'm going to give this one a 7, too, because I think it's equally as good.
Okay.
For different reasons. Matches were good, great advancement of characters, Piper, a good Hogan-Orndorff match, great tag title match, loved, you know, Steamboat and Jake. So it's just as good as that one. So I'm going to give it the same grade I gave that one. So I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
All right. Besides WrestleMania 1, that's probably our highest cumulative grade, I would think. Besides, was that when we said it was September 85? I gave the really hard. Oh, no. Okay. So that one got a 14.5 combined, 7 and a 7.5.
Yeah.
So a notch below. But it's easily one of the best shows we've seen so far. It was a lot of fun. So be sure to check it out when you get some time. Scott, we'll be back next week. Kelly will be back in the house as we check out the October 86 MSG house show. And that's a very interesting one for reasons we'll talk about next week.
Do we have feedback?
Oh, we do. Good call.
Feedback.
Some right here. Good call. Tim Drake over at Kayfabe Memory said on the latest Vintage Vault, this is actually a callback to last week more than tonight, but on the latest Vintage Vault, you and your colleagues were wondering about Tonga Kid's whereabouts between his two 1980s WWF runs. In early 85, he debuted in Pro Wrestling USA, poised for a big push and feud with Larry Zbyszko. By the summer, Tonga was gone for the promotion, working in Montreal. He also worked in a Jersey-based indie called NWF or something along those lines, where a lot of former WWF guys were working, including the Wild Samoans. By the spring, Tonga was shooting the film Body Slam with Roddy Piper. When that ended, he was back in the WWF along with Haku as the Islanders. And in an ironic twist, when he left the WWF the second time, replaced by, well, maybe we'll talk about it when we get there, but just you can use your imagination for the irony here. And he was renamed High Chief, so we'll talk about that. Our buddy old Half an Onion Loaf says, in regard to Jake Steamboat, I thought this was a real blow-off to the feud as their most high-profile match in terms of viewership. Really good sprint with cool visuals and a hilarious notion that Steamboat's baby alligator or Kaiman could be used in any way or could in any way be considered a dragon. The finish works because it lets the feud end with Jake without Jake taking too much of a hit and adds a new layer of arrogance to his character. And then Brian Bayless, in his review over at Scott Keats' blog, said, an excellent show, hot angles and good matches, whacking Adonis with the crutch. They wrote Adonis off TV for weeks as he was either suspended or sent to rehab. The Piper stuff was great. We got a world championship match free on TV and an awesome tag title match plus Steamboat Roberts. So there's your feedback. You can provide that to us every week. You know, we'll read it for house shows if you had it, but we're really going to call it out specifically for the signings main events and pay-per-views. But feel free to kick in any memories or thoughts you have either on the show we just reviewed or the show upcoming. We'll have a thread up at PlaceMation.com where the comments are enabled, and we'll read that feedback each and every week, just like the old days. So make sure to bring that to us.
Yeah, and we can actually, JR, if you want to just say it now, because the October 20th, 86 house show was on the network, we could probably open up comments for that one, too.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone should check that out. Yeah. It is on WWE Network, yes.
It's on the network, yes.
Yep, so check that out and leave your feedback before next week, and we'll read it. New letters from Center Stage will be dropping this week, and we have a big announcement because episode 20 is coming up soon as well. We'll announce who's going to be on joining us for that show. So stay tuned this Friday morning as that drops. All right, usually late Thursday night. early Friday. Jeff Learns Wrestling should be back soon. Jeff's on vacation. We'll be talking WrestleMania 3 eventually. Be sure to check out Making the Cut. Aaron George and I talked a few guys for the PTBN Greatest Duty Wrestler Ever project that's out there, along with all the other content. Lots of pod blasts and podcasts out there for that project. Our friend Stacy did a great written piece on Victoria. She's going to be writing up her case for some of the divas that are out there, or I'm sorry, women's wrestlers. So be sure to check that out and participate in the project. There's a Facebook group we can add you to, or you can do that without being part of that conversation. You can just submit a list. Be sure to do a lot of research, though, because that's a big part of the project. Anything you got going on, Scott, you want to talk about?
Well, of course, we did Main Event last week. We did a big WrestleMania mega preview. So if you want to look back and see how we did on our – I mean WrestleMania SummerSlam preview, if you want to look back and see how we did on our choices. But we'll be back next week for our next episode. Might debut a new guest, actually. Chad and I have been talking about it, getting a new guy to talk a little New Japan and some other stuff. Pete was fantastic last week. Mm-hmm. He was talking about the Scenic City Invitational. And
he didn't have any gastrointestinal issues like he did on that Titans four-year consideration. Did he?
No.
It sounded like he was gurgling during that Andre the Giant match. I don't know what the hell was going on.
I know. No, he was on a fucking roll, though. I pulled the ripcord, and he wouldn't shut up. So no, he was good. No, he recapped the G1 Climax, and he also talked about being in Nashville for the Scenic City Invitational. So
and then he G1 Climax.
Check the episode out. It's really good. And we'll be back next week with we'll talk about what happened tonight. Fresh SmackDown and the live action going on, and of course what happened on Raw, and look about what's going on in WWE and NXT. Does Jeff know that there's now two Machados in Major League Baseball?
I don't know because
I forgot there's a Dixon Machado that plays for the Tigers, so maybe
Dix Machado should be Jeff's name.
Dix Machado,
you know,
yes.
Makes a lot more sense.
He's a good manager name.
All right, PlaceNation.com/Amazon for all your shopping needs. Be sure to visit there. Facebook.com/PlaceNation, Twitter Place2BNation, Tumblr and Instagram as well. For Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next week. Kelly will be back, that filthy, filthy Canadian, and his lead in the NFL picks will be back with us. We'll be talking MSG. Watch it on the network. Submit your feedback. We'll talk about it. Talk to you in 6 days.
Dix Machado, King Kong Bundy.
Pumpkinhead. Oh, speaking of, that should be out soon, huh? Ship here.
Ah, yes.
Listen, you know I love you, but I just can't take this. You know I love you. Your eyes go through me, but I don't know why. Oh, I know you're going, but I can't believe it's the way that you're leaving. It's like we never knew each other at all. It may be my fault. Now I want to spend my life just
say, you know I love you, but I just can't take this. You know I love you, but I'm playing for keeps. Oh, I need you, I'm not gonna make this. You know I want to, but I'm in too deep. You know I love you, but I just can't take this. You know I love you, but I'm playing for keeps. Oh, I need you, I'm not gonna make this. You know I want to, but I'm in.